every album has a thought of me realizing, like, hey, school is really expensive. I have a lot riding on this, and I don't know how long I can keep doing music because, you know, music's not a form of paying the bills.
Man, why's everybody got to be so goddamn negative all the time? I'm Mike Moschetto. This is Selling Out. I'm the casino that pays nothing when you win. Please put your money in. Hello, you are listening to Selling Out, a podcast about music and money, about sound investments. Get it? Sound investments? Investments toward making sounds, perhaps sounds ordered in succession and combination over time to produce musical compositions having unity and continuity? Oh, never mind. I'm Mike Moschetto, and my guest today is Joe Boynton. Now, you may know him as the vocalist of the pop-punk emo band Transit. Some will also perhaps remember his lesser-known side project called Long Lost, in which yours truly played the bass. But after years of silence since Transit broke up back in 2016, Joe finally has new music on the way under the name Narrowcast. It's less of a band and I guess more of a constellation of musicians, including Joe and also some of my old bandmates from Aviator and other people that we met in our time on the road together. I got to play keys on one track. It's very exciting. But the debut single will be released this Friday, March 12th. I've got a sneak preview of that in today's episode, as well as an unreleased old long-lost track that I dug up. It's instrumental, hence why it's still unreleased, but you know what? It still fucking goes, dude. It's so sick, and I'm having trouble being humble about it. But Joe, on the other hand, is a solid dude, very humble himself, despite having experienced, you know, really high highs and also the lowest of lows throughout his music career. And that humility comes in part, I think, from his roots in hardcore and punk and DIY music rather than the slicker indie pop rock world his musical output came to later reflect. But it also comes from being a great and willing conversationalist, as you'll hear. And of course, there's much acknowledgement of the late Tim Landers, founding guitarist of Transit, who sadly passed in 2019, but was clearly, you know, a driving force behind the band's early ambitions and also their successes. So without too much further ado, here's a little bit of The Ones Who Fell Through from Narrowcast, followed, of course, by my interview with Joe. Enjoy. Leave me my peace of mind. It's rightfully mine. Belong to me. When did you join Transit? How old were you?
I think I was 20 or 19 or 20. I believe I was, no, 19. I'm going to say 19.
Was it your first band?
No. I had one band before Transit called Breaking Waves. It was a melodic hardcore band. Our friend Josh Barrett played drums. My friend Rob that I met at Wentworth that I was attending at the time played bass. I played guitar and sang backup vocals. And then one of my closest friends, Carl, was the front man.
A lot of this is going to be like, man, I don't know how, like, we were in a band together and I didn't know this about you. So when you joined Transit, you said you were at Wentworth at the mm-hmm. time. So were you just a full-time student or what were you doing for work at that point?
Full-time student, and I was working at T-Mobile on Newberry Street. I was in industrial design. So product design, closest thing to that. If you don't know what industrial design is, it's basically like Shark Tank, the major.
Okay.
And okay. It's Shark Tank mixed. Basically, you have to do graphic design, 3D renderings.
CAD
you
and
have
stuff?
To build, yeah, CAD. You have to physically build models and then and have like sometimes you'd have prototypes, like working models, and sometimes you would just have like a mock-up, like this is what it would look like if it, you know, if it was a physical product in the world. So I was doing that when I joined Transit, and I was working at T-Mobile on Newberry Street, which was pretty crazy.
In what way?
First customer I had threatened to blow up our store with a grenade.
Okay.
He left T-Mobile to join Verizon, and he left his contract prematurely. So he just comes right up to me and he goes, I want my $500. He was wearing camo, like head to toe. And it was just, he looked scary. He looked very scary. And he told me, if I don't have my $500 in my bank account by 6 p.m., I'm coming back to the store with a live grenade. And I had to get my manager, and she kicked him out and called the police, and I got to go home.
There
you
go. That
was like my first day on the sales floor. So when we were writing Stay Home, that's what I was doing for work while I was going through what's called sophomore review, which is basically you have to hit the criteria of everything. You know, you have to be great at hand drawing, rendering, just about everything. You have to hit a certain score or you repeat the entire year.
Oh my God.
So I was doing that while
at great personal expense, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, so that was all going on at once. So that was probably the most difficult year of my life, easily.
I don't know why I thought this, but you know, the vibe that I got when I asked like what you were doing for work, I, for some reason I pictured like Journeys at the mall and you're like, oh, are those big puffy skate shoes, DC skate shoes? You need another size up? Or I don't know. I don't know why.
No, I did work at Tilly's at one point, but that was just to make, just to kill time.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah. That was way later on. That was just to kind of kill time and just have a job. And, you know, I wasn't really trying to make big money there. I just felt like I should just, if I have free time, work. So
you got to get the days to go by somehow. We'll get there. So at some point, Transit starts, you know, playing to bigger and bigger crowds, selling more and more records. And this is something that I've brought up with other people on the show before, but like there's a phenomenon where the band at some point gets away from you and becomes something bigger than yourself and kind of develops its own gravity and its own momentum that wants to thrust it forward. Talk to me kind of about that inflection point of like when you have to start pulling back from work and from school to kind of focus on band stuff and how that shakes out.
That came from Tim. Tim Landers was really all about touring and being on the road and getting the band as far as we could, where I was more focused on school. And I was even writing in some of the early Transit songs how, you know, this wasn't going to last forever. And, you know, it wasn't going to be, and not because of the song Nothing Lasts Forever. That was a much later song. Yeah. But even on This Will Not Define Us, Radio Flyer has a song about, you know, the band ending, and then Stay Home has a song about the band. Almost every album has a thought of me realizing like, hey, you know, school is really expensive. I have a lot riding on this. And, you know, I don't know how long I can keep doing music because, you know, music's not a form of paying the bills. And so I just kept doing it because I loved it. And I found a community within the people and within the bands, the fans and the bands. That was really the momentum. But the reason, I think the main reason why Transit toured as much as we did at the beginning during like Stay Home and Keeps to Yourself was Tim was gung-ho, let's go. And you know, he was our leader. So we followed suit and did the best we could and started, you know, hitting the road full time.
Is there a point where you have to say like, sorry, T-Mobile, sorry, Wentworth, like what's the... Describe that. Yeah. So you didn't finish. Oh. Did you not finish school?
I did finish school. Oh, okay. 10 years later.
Oh. So yeah, but not contiguous to your time in Transit.
No. Okay. After Transit broke up, it was the first thing I did. I went back to school and I finished, and that was really difficult because I had a lot of I had a lot of downtime from being an industrial designer.
You were that old kid.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That was fun.
What does it feel like to kind of step off the ledge of being like, all right, I have to either quit my job and find a new one when I get back or just not take this opportunity up?
For me, it was once the crowd started getting bigger and I started getting, I'd say beat up more at shows from people getting excited and like, you know, hitting the microphone stand into your mouth and it bleeds and like having all these like ridiculous moments on stage that remind you of why you love music in the first place and you're on the other side of it. Once life really hits you, like this is what's most important. It was pretty easy for me to leave school and leave T-Mobile and leave home. I've always been someone that drives with their gut. So when life presents an opportunity to me, I don't hesitate. I never have. And it was out of most of the band, obviously Tim, it was the easiest for, and then I would say I was number two.
is there like a step down in your quality of life in order to accommodate like the very costly, very low paying work, if you can call it that, of being in a band? Or
when I started touring with Transit, I was eating two meals a day. I used to steal Cliff Bars from gas stations. I even had a trick to do so, so that I could eat and not feel sick and get nauseous and, you know, just quit eventually from the pressure. So I'm not from a family that had money, from a family that got by, and struggled. My mom worked three jobs and raised three kids by herself in Massachusetts, which obviously is a really expensive place to live.
Yeah.
So, you know, she didn't have money to send me on the road. You know, I was eating like two meals a day for a while. And when we'd crash at people's houses, we would either ask them for food or, you know, we would eat as much food as we could find. The way it feels like you're just living out of the van. You know this just as well as I do.
It's
a bunch of stinky guys in a small box on wheels and
sardine can.
Yeah. So the early years of Transit were rough. And then once we started having like per diems and being able to pay each other to eat every day, it became a lot easier.
At about what point was that? Like how many years into the band was it starting to kind of pay you back a little bit?
I'd say Listen and Forgive.
Listen
and Forgive came out. So that was when, once we started doing things like Warped Tour, that's when we were able to like, you know, have a bandwagon and have internet. We had internet at one point, like Wi-Fi in the van and in the bandwagon. And I thought that was crazy.
Yeah,
that was like the most luxury thing I think I felt we had as a band. And then bands like Lydia were really kind to us. And their manager at the time, Michael Glockner, let us use one of their hotel rooms for like half of one of their tours. So we were like, you know, 'cause our tour was following theirs. So we got, there was a lot of moments where people really helped us out and came through for us. So it was never hard for us to make friends on the road, and, you know, we'd always have a place to stay. We helped form communities, friends and bands that loved us. Those communities helped us stay on the road. So, you know, one hand washed the other pretty much from probably when we put out Keep This to Yourself until Joyride.
Said Tim was very much in control of everything. Or he was kind of like the guy. He was kind of the point man.
He's the captain. Yeah. He was the captain. He was the most level-headed and most like business savvy and had the most like leader-like personalities of the band, I would say. That, you know, we needed, without him, we wouldn't have gone nearly as far as we did and taken the band as seriously as we did as a business, like, you know, paying bills, playing shows, getting the shows on time, you know, not getting too fucked up on the road, getting too fucked up on the road and then figuring out how to apologize for it. you know what I mean? We definitely, the early days, we definitely missed a show or two.
Ooh.
Or showed up late or got stuck in traffic based on poor planning. But it happens to more bands than you think.
We almost missed a show because we went go-karting and decided that was more fun.
It's amazing.
It was still one of the best days I've had on tour. Did Tim kind of push you to think of the band as a business, or was that kind of an external pressure?
No, Tim was very cool about it. It was about like a more like a legacy. Like, what are we going to be remembered for? What are we going to leave behind? You know, how much do you think these songs help people and how much do they help you? In my eyes, it was all like punk rock, like just play to play. Play every show, talk to every person that comes, because, you know, they don't have to be there. You know what I mean? I met one of my favorite local bands and I went up to one of the guitarists and I was really excited because they're going to put out their first release. And the guy wanted nothing to do with me. He was just like, whatever, dude, like, who are you? Like, what do you want? Like, completely wrote me off.
Insane.
And that was the first time I ever like talked to a band I didn't know. So I assumed most bands were dicks and most people in bands assholes, and you should just probably just listen to the music and then that's it, and then, you know, buy some merch and go home. Then I met Pat Flynn from Have Heart. And I think I was like $3 or $4 short to be able to buy the What Counts record they put out. Was it like a 7-inch, I believe it was. And he gave it to me. He goes, "Hey man, I've seen you at like 4 of our shows. You know, you can just have it."
Wow.
And it blew my fucking mind. Blew my mind. And it, I think from meeting him, it was in Haverhill. I think they played with Verse when Rebuild came out. And
where? Exit 23?
Yeah. It was, yeah, Exit 23.
I was probably there. We were probably in the same room at that point.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
No, that moment meeting Pat Flynn really changed my perspective of being in a band and how genuine someone in a band could be. So right from the, I believe right from the get-go, it was just like, "Hey man, like, if you don't have enough money here," I remember giving, This Will Not Define Us, I gave so many of those away, our first full length, because, you know, I just thought of that moment, how cool that is to just be a good person.
Yeah. And, I mean, and, you're paying it forward.
Yeah. Appreciate the people.
You're paying it forward from that experience. And you're also, you know, that's really special to them, right?
Yeah. Him doing that was really fucking special. And when I get a lesson that's powerful enough like that, I don't take it lightly. I ingrain it in myself and try to live by it and carry that kind of like torch forward. But yeah, so it was really the community that kept me wanting to do it. Cause again, I was writing songs about leaving on This Not the Finest radio flyer as lines about leaving the band. That's our first full length.
I mean, one of these times you're going to be right, I guess. So you might as well keep writing about that.
Yeah, I didn't know it was going to be, you know, one, like, dude, I can't even know, 5-6 releases later.
Yeah, that's crazy. So after Listen and Forgive, mm-hmm. you're riding high, mm-hmm. everything's going really great. Like you're eating caviar on your internet bus on on Warped Tour, whatever. Yeah. Are you working or is Transit your full-time job?
Transit's full-time. There's no way I could keep a job being away. No one cares that you're in a band. The only person to care that I was in a band and give me a job is my father-in-law. My wife, Amanda's dad, had me work construction. I worked for him for a few years. That was the best kind of hookup I ever had for being in a band and making money, was I could go home and work a job. And I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know construction. Like I'm not a construction guy. Like I would just figure it out and just wing it.
Yeah.
And
power tools do all the work, I think.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then I did work at Tilly's. That was really helpful. I wish they paid more, but that was the job that I just kind of did because I had to make something while I wasn't making anything.
Mm. Your drummer, Daniel, did construction too. Wasn't that his kind of full-time thing?
He did TV installations with his brother. So when Transit disbanded, him and his brother had their own company installing. It was like TVs and surround sound.
I just have a very different, like,
he looks
perspective
like
on all of it. Yeah, I just picture him in like a hard hat whenever he's not.
He looks like that. He looks like he'd be wearing a hard hat.
He looks like he could kick my
ass. Downtime.
Yeah, he probably could too. I'm sure. I'm very cowardly and small. So I don't normally talk about like music criticism on this show because it doesn't really fit into the purview of what I want to talk about. But I feel like the Young New England thing is maybe a little interesting insofar as, if I'm being diplomatic, that record was polarizing to a lot of people, right? How does that play out from the perspective of you, the artist? Like, do less people come out? Like, what does that look like on the ground if a record you put out is not as well received as you'd like?
From our perspective, it didn't seem like it didn't get well received. It only felt that it wasn't as well received financially when, you know, we weren't selling as many records as Listen and Forgive. That was really it. It was just financially that we felt, you know, we weren't moving as many products or, you know, the label wasn't moving as many albums and stuff like that. But on the, as far as the shows go, it wasn't that big of a difference. It just kind of stayed the same, like how big the crowds were. They didn't get bigger. We didn't really know if they were going to get bigger. And we're very stubborn. We're just like every Transit record is a different record. There's no record that's the same sound. We tried to do a piebald and saves the day do. We just say, we don't care. This is what we're going to record. This is what we're going to put out. That's it. If you like it, great. If you don't, that's fine.
Yeah. It's just kind of like the opportunity cost of being a growing, evolving original band.
Yeah. And I don't think any of us thought we were going to like do music as for a living and become this gigantic band. Like I didn't think I mean, maybe some of us did and they didn't say anything, but it wasn't the mentality from my perspective. It was more record labels going to pay for us to put out a record. Great. Let's put out a record.
Yeah.
Let's put out what we want to put out and let's see what happens. You know, I was also happier then. So it's hard to, I wouldn't want to write a bunch of super sad songs if I'm a happy person.
Yeah. You're not really trafficking in the same material.
But then I almost left before Listen and Forgive. We recorded Keep Us to Yourself. And when Keep Us to Yourself came out, I was in my most, punk rock or die mentality for music. I was just going through a rough time with school and family situations. And I wanted Listen and Forgive to be angry and dark and just miserable. That was the angle, was trying to just get my, you know, my miserable feelings out through a record. And then through the demo process, that record got scrapped. And then Listen and Forgive was starting to get put into place. So we'd take the songs that I worked on, these really, really sad, depressing songs, and then we would make them more ABAB and make them more catchy and kind of take songs that were all put together and Frankenstein them into other songs. And while that was happening, I was like, fuck this. Like, I'm done.
Wow.
And then I was about to quit, and because I wasn't doing what I wanted to do. Then I had a long talk with Tim and changed my mind about potentially leaving. I don't know if I was gonna leave, but I felt like I was gonna leave. My gut was feeling like that's where I was going at. And it was just based on song structures, me not being open to a different sound, which happens.
I mean, you were, you know, not to defend something that didn't ultimately happen, but you know, you're the lyrical force behind everything, you know, like you're a huge part of the creative output of it. So, you know.
Yeah. So
what are you going to be unhappy and, you know, be boxed in? I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, I changed my mind. I stayed and I put everything I had into it. I just, you know, I had to, you know, have a little bit of a compromise from my end. And I'm glad I did, because that was the record that got us out there. It got us on Warped Tour, which wasn't the funnest experience.
Yeah. That has, Warped Tour has come up before on this podcast.
Yeah. It's not fun. It's grueling. It's not what you think it is when you're a kid and you go to your first Warped Tour. From the other side, it's definitely a lot of work. And but through that, for Listen and Forgive, we wrote one of those records where it was the time that a record like that could come out and people would get really excited. And that was it. It was almost like we were writing what we were going to write. And some of it was luck for that amount of people to be into us. It was definitely an overnight, oh my God, like, we're a big band now. What? Like, it was very quick. I remember it was like almost instantaneous, where it was like, we had people care. But I remember when that record came out and the reception it got, it was like weird. It was weird. It was not what we were picturing at all.
When Transit ends, though, are you just burnt? Is that what kind of precipitated that? Or was there an inciting incident? Or were you all just kind of like, you know, we've had a good run?
No, it was the same voice in me that made me want to tour and made me want to be in a band. It's that inner dialogue that's like, maybe, you know, maybe it's time. There was a lot of moments of maybe it's time, you know, you're getting older. More and more people are leaving the band or talking about leaving the band. So, you know, it wasn't just one of us wanting, it wasn't just like me or one person being like, I don't want to do Transit anymore with bands breaking up. It was a few people in the band kind of around the same time.
Okay.
And I really wanted to get out of, you know, just being so cold up in Massachusetts and feeling like I would rent forever. I was on the path of never owning a home. Period, because it's so expensive up there. If I was living up there, I don't think I would be able to financially.
And let me tell you, it's fucked up.
Yeah. And so it kind of like, I love Massachusetts so much, but to have a future financially, because I feel like the path I went with leaving school, doing the band, and trying to get back into the working world, then having all this debt, it's like, why don't you just kind of reset and go somewhere where people can own homes.
You're in North Carolina, right?
Yeah. We're in Charlotte.
You're in Charlotte. I love Charlotte.
Yeah, Charlotte's great.
I'm honestly thinking like that's one of the first places that I want to visit in the United States when we can travel again safely.
Yeah, and that's why I'm here.
It's cool
because of the band. But yeah, and I love Transit. I know a lot of people know me for Transit, but like music isn't just my experience with Transit. Not being in Transit definitely heavily affects me emotionally, but that's not where I met music. I met music when I was a little kid. Even if I worked on 100 songs and no one heard them, I would die happy. Like, I just love making stuff. You know what I mean? Some people like to woodwork. Some people like to work on a car in their garage. I like to make songs and mess with words and have these ridiculously long Google documents and color code different lines I've written and organize them by end rhyme. And then, you know, like that's, it's always just been blocks. The blocks just turned from Lego blocks to AutoCAD and SolidWorks to Google documents with songs and melodies and lyrics. That's wow. Where
in a lot of ways you kind of had a very clean break from your life as a musician into like your new life in Charlotte. But did you go back to school in North Carolina?
No, I went back to Wentworth. So I went right back into senior year of an industrial
super, super,
design
super
major.
Senior year.
A lot of people know or have a friend that's in an architecture major and how insane it is. It's the same amount of stress, I think.
I feel like we've talked about this before, because before you said industrial design, I was like, he's like an architecture major or something.
It's just as intense. It's just as emotionally demanding. And you, like, I didn't drink on the weekends at school. I worked. I went to studio. I lived in the studio. We had to delegate how many nights you could pull an all-nighter because a project was due on a certain day and people would get sick. Some of my friends would get sick and then miss their presentations because they had to go to the hospital. Like,
Jesus
it
Christ.
It was brutal. It was the hardest thing I've ever gone through.
So is that what you're doing now then?
No.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't really help my career. Music did not help my design career. And once I finished with the band, I just got my degree to get my degree. I was not in love with the major anymore. And
so
I still
you're
had to
a completist then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are you doing now out of curiosity?
So I work like, it's basically, a communications department, for, 6 luxury dealerships. So I help manage the schedules.
Wow.
And it's a really beautiful company. They've helped me through everything. When Tim passed away, they didn't even hesitate. They let me take the time off. I didn't have any time I could take off. So it wasn't a job I was really going to stick with. It was more of a just like, let me just find another job that pays more money. And I found a company that like really empathized with me during some hard times.
Wow.
With family and friends and my brother passing away. My job immediately, they go, you know, you take as much time as you need.
Oh my God. I don't think I knew about your brother.
Yeah. My older brother passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thank you. But yeah, so I love the company I work for because when shit hits the fan, it's not even a question. It's like, you need to do what you need to do. And that's so hard to find. So that's why I'm working for them, is because they've helped me out so much and have been there, and they love that I would do music.
So Narrowcast is the new project, and mm-hmm. it's been a very, it's like five, no, more than 5 years, because Transit last show was what, mm-hmm. 2016, right?
Yes.
But the last record came out when, 2014?
Joyride came out, when did Joyride come out, 2015? That's interesting. I can't even tell you right now.
I don't know. Yeah, you're the expert here. I'm kind of counting on you, brother.
Yeah, Joyride came out. Oh, this is terrible.
I'm leaving this in. This is priceless.
Yeah, 2014. Yeah,
2014. Check me out. Wow.
October 21st.
So you were coming up on like 7 years, really, since the last time you released original music.
Yeah.
So I guess my question is then, why now? Like, why only? Were there other times in the last, you know, 5-ish years of post-Transit activity that you were tempted and it just didn't come together, or you were just like in another headspace?
No, I'm doing everything, like we're doing everything ourselves. There's no record label. We all have jobs. It takes a lot longer to put stuff together. We scrapped a ton of songs that we didn't like enough. And for not this release, but the one that's going to follow, the songs that we're putting out soon.
Wow, we already have that mapped out.
Yeah, so we have the singles that we're putting out, and then we have an EP. And the EP was recorded first, and that was recorded with Adam Lazara from Taking Back Sunday in between his tours. which that band tours for when they tour, they tour for a long time. Yeah. It's just, it's not transit. It would be like, you have a couple months, write the record, record the record, put it out and tour. Now it's like, you want to record? Okay. When do you have time? I have no idea. So it's like not a rigorous schedule anymore.
So this has been in the works for like a couple of years then, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of these songs, but recorded wise, they're not very old. Like we got the masters like last month. Like
two months ago. So the pandemic was kind of like an impetus to really start committing it to tape.
Yeah. I think so. But yeah, so overall it takes a lot longer when you do them yourself. It takes a lot longer when you work full time and you're in another state.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just making everything new.
So imagine there's no pandemic. Okay. That's crucial to this next question. Mm-hmm. Should Narrowcast put a band together and start to like play some shows? You know, you said that your current employer has been very like gracious toward you and kind of doing your thing. They love that you play music. What if you needed to get on the road for a couple of weeks? How would they?
I don't know. I don't know what touring's going to be like. I don't know when touring's going to begin again.
Oh yeah. Right.
I don't know what my life's going to entail. I literally don't have an answer. I don't know.
But that's kind of freeing too, though, right?
Yeah, there's zero pressure on this band. There's no, like I said, there's no label. It's our money going into it. If you buy a record, it's going back to pay the cost of recording the record. Like that's what Transit started on. That's how I want to keep this. And, yeah, man, it's just about legacy. It's about like, I love the band Mineral. You think Chris Simpson cares if he's making a bunch of money off those Mineral records or not? Like, I feel like that dude's just doing music because that's what he wants to do.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If people like it, great. And if people don't like it, great. Like, that's what I want to do. It's the same thing. It's just have the ability to record and put it out, talk about it.
I mean, that's gotta be the overarching thing that kind of separates what you and I do from like a lot of other kind of spheres of music.
Oh yeah, dude. When you go on Warped Tour, like you're meeting people that are in our boat and then you're meeting people who are just business. You meet people that are so detached.
I feel like Warped Tour makes sense that you would run into people who are a little bit more straight laced about it. Cause I also feel like the circumstances of Warped Tour kind of force you to consider it in that way. Otherwise you're just not going to hack it. Cause it's such a grind.
It's such a grind and it's such kill or be killed. And it's such like, everyone's just like screaming for attention. Like there's so many bands wanting the attention and being that band that like breaks on the tour.
Obviously that paid off, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So
it paid off. Cause I have something that I have something that I can keep with me forever. Like, I have something to look back on with such a genuine love and pride for how much I gave it. And, you know, I've lost my voice talking to people that wanted to talk to me after playing a set or before a set so many times. And I still communicate with a lot of people that I met on the road now, even though Transit's not a band anymore. But yeah, I have something that I carry around with me and it's completely changed who I am for the better, and I'm just so thankful that it happened.
As always, if you like what you heard today, you can support Joe's musical activities, starting, of course, by pre-saving the new Narrowcast single on Spotify. I feel like I age a year every month now when I hear about things like pre-saving, but if it helps them, I say do it. Of course, I'll have the link to that, as well as all things Transit and Long Lost, in the description of this episode. And I will continue to update the running Spotify playlist of nearly all the tunes featured on the show so far. If you have some money left over from all the cool Transit records you bought and want to help support Selling Out with a small financial contribution, you may do so at patreon.com/sellingoutpodcast. Of course, no financial contribution is necessary. You can just leave a rating and review on your podcast app of choice. High ratings and positive reviews are strongly preferred. And absent that, you can also simply recommend the show to friends. Hell, recommend it to some foes for all I care, you know? Maybe they'll hate it, and you'll have inconvenienced them, and I get a new listener out of it. Win-win. If you just want to reach out to me with a question or comment, you can email sellingoutpodcast@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter at SellinOutAD or on Instagram at SellinOutPodcast. Theme music by Such Gold. Cover photo by Nick DiNatale. I'm Mike Moschetto. Thanks for listening. See ya.